This is The Science Show, where at the beginning I posed a question. Which is the fourth biggest addictive substance in use? This was posed by Peter Osborne, an Australian trained in neuroscience who now lives in Taiwan. A question with enormous and worrying implications.
In this program, Harry Schnur and I are going to talk about drugs of addiction, but probably not the drugs of addiction that most listeners are familiar with. It would be without controversy to say that the three most commonly consumed addictive substances in the world are caffeine in coffee and tea, alcohol in alcoholic beverages, and nicotine in tobacco products. Now, I ask the listener to briefly set aside their cup of caffeine, their cocktail and/or cigar, and consider what is the fourth most commonly consumed drug of addiction in the world.
Marijuana, cocaine, amphetamine, heroin, and ecstasy, one of those.
Sorry, not even close. Time for some facts. According to the 2017 annual report from the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime, globally, there are less than 20 million users of each of cocaine, opium, heroin, or ecstasy. Global amphetamine users are estimated to be about 36 million. And not one country in the world has more than 3% of their population use any of these drugs within a year. Cannabis is more popular, with 183 million global users, but still well behind the fourth most commonly consumed addictive substance, which is betel quid. You'll notice that I didn't qualify betel quid with an active pharmacological compound, and that's because I'm not confident that science understands the active compounds in betel quid. This is not because betel quid has particularly mysterious properties, it's just that the appropriate research has not yet been performed.
So according to the UN drug report, what's the global usage of betel quid?
Betel quid usage remains excluded from the UN's annual drug report, despite repeated requests for inclusion by researchers and the existence of a wealth of epidemiological publications documenting consumption in Asian cultures. In Taiwan, as in many Asian countries, betel quid chewing is very popular with farmers, fishermen, truck drivers, labourers, and old people, people in the lower educational and economic groups. Despite being the fourth most commonly consumed addictive substance in the world, accurate knowledge of any aspect of betel quid chewing is almost unknown in the West. One of the few references I could find to betel quid chewing in Western culture is the Rodgers and Hammerstein Broadway musical and subsequent 1950s film, South Pacific, which used a World War II background to address issues of interracial romance and indirectly introduced Western audiences to betel quid chewing.
Bloody Mary's chewing betel nuts. She is always chewing betel nuts. Bloody Mary is the girl I love. Now ain't that too damn bad?
Ooh, I like that. Big brassy sound.
Oh, great horns. But as we'll come to hear, these lyrics from yesteryear are extremely condescending and dismissive of betel quid chewers, and unfortunately are prophetic of the attitude of indifference that still exists in the scientific community today.
A question. These lyrics reference betel nut. Is this different from betel quid?
This is a strange bit of English language confusion. If we're being really pedantic, there's no such thing as betel nut. The nuts that are chewed are from a small, graceful palm tree, the Arica catechu palm. Very few people chew the nut by itself because it's really quite bitter. When chewed, the nut is most commonly wrapped in a leaf of the betel pippa vine that has been painted with a saturated solution of calcium hydroxide, or lime. Traditionally, this lime was made from powdered shells and coral that was cooked. Now it's manufactured industrially. In many countries other than Taiwan, tobacco is also added to this basic betel quid mixture.
Oh, I see. So betel nuts originates from confusion with the betel pipper leaf.
Possibly.
What's it taste like? And what's its effect.
Like alcohol or tobacco, it's an acquired taste. Its effects are a very strong increase in heart rate, local vasodilation so that your face and your head become hot and you sweat, and it stimulates saliva production so that you have to spit every couple of minutes. Mentally, it makes you a little less focused on your immediate environment. It's a stimulant, and the effect lasts for about 10 minutes.
I see. Is it common in Australia?
No. In Australia, betel quid consumption is limited to a very small number of elderly Asian or Indian immigrants. However, an October 2017 BBC report estimated that almost half of Papua New Guineans chew areca nut and lime betel quid.
I know Australia retains a close relationship with Papua New Guinea, so I imagine that there's a lot of Australian-funded betel quid research coming out of PNG?
In a perfect world, maybe. Australian research in PNG has been limited to less than half a dozen papers over the last 10 years, and these are predominantly epidemiological. In Taiwan, betel quid research is more vibrant than in most countries, yet enormous improvements in pharmacological knowledge are needed before a replacement therapy for betel quid substance use disorder is developed and available.
So what type of betel quid research is conducted in Taiwan?
Mostly cancer research, but there's almost no research on therapies for betel quid dependence, which is logically a bit strange, since you only get cancer after years of chewing. But then what makes a research topic popular is not always based on logic or need.
So betel quid chewing is addictive and carcinogenic.
Let's get my colleague epidemiologist, Professor Chen-Hung Li of Kaohsiung University to answer that. Chen-Hung has a lisp, which gets worse when he's worried about having to speak perfect radio English. So Jeff Miller, a Chinese English translator, has come to be the voice of Chen-Hung. Hello, Chen-Hung.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Addiction has huge influence on people's lives and economies that penetrates deep into society. Can you clarify what is meant by addiction and how it is measured?
Addiction is a very nebulous term that has evolved in general usage. It isn't actually well defined. Recently, the word addiction was replaced in the clinical context with substance use disorder, which is a more refined term and also attempts to destigmatize dependence. Historically, addiction has been quantified through the use of questionnaires, which try to rank a person's compulsion to perform drug-seeking or other behaviors that interfere negatively with their work, their health, and their social interactions. These questionnaires are regularly refined to improve their precision and accuracy. Americans tend to use the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the latest iteration of which is the DSM-5.
So is this the same DSM handbook that characterizes if you have ADHD or cocaine addiction or depression?
Absolutely. It's an enormously influential text that forms the basis for prioritizing the allocation of public funds for research and for mental illness treatments.
Okay, let's get back to Harry's question. How many people chew betel quid containing areca nut and lime without tobacco?
We estimate that about 2 million people in Taiwan chew betel quid, up to 4 million people in Papua New Guinea, and perhaps a million each in Hunan in southern China and in Sri Lanka. A conservative estimate probably has about 7 million people chewing betel quid without tobacco.
And now for a question that will give a much bigger answer. How many people chew betel quid with added tobacco?
The general lack of relevant census data on this makes an accurate assessment difficult, but people chew betel quid tobacco concoctions in India, Sri Lanka, Nepal, Thailand, Indonesia, and on many Pacific islands. Estimates are that between 200 and 600 million people chew some sort of betel quid tobacco mixture. Many of these do so on a daily basis.
So about 8 to 26 times the population of Australia.
Reading the older literature, I get the impression that some researchers considered that dependency to betel quid was the result of dependency to tobacco. What research shows that chewers can become dependent and exhibit substance use disorder to betel quid without tobacco?
Good question, Pete. Betel quid chewing is not endemic to Western cultures, and a lack of first-hand exposure means that the details on betel quid addiction was, and still is, largely unknown here in the West. To be fair, some earlier studies didn't distinguish between the different types of betel quid that were chewed, and thus interpretation at a distance is problematic. Most recently, I and my coworkers interviewed users of betel quid with and without tobacco from 6 countries around Asia. By examining the type of betel quid they were chewing, and by using the DSM-5 criteria, we showed that there is no doubt that, in susceptible individuals, both betel quid without tobacco and betel quid with tobacco are associated with dependence and substance use disorders. The incidence of dependence and substance use disorder is higher if tobacco is added to betel quid. Chewing betel quid without tobacco, as occurs in Taiwan and also Papua New Guinea, has been confirmed by WHO as a type 1 carcinogen associated with oral, pharyngeal, and esophageal cancers. Studies in Taiwan and India have demonstrated the incidence of oral cancers to associate strongly with the frequency and the amount of betel quid use. I am sure this is also true for chewers in PNG.
Chen Hong. There are probably twice as many areca nut and lime chewers in PNG as there are in Taiwan. Taiwan has an efficient, nationwide, subsidized healthcare system that treats betel quid chewers with oral pathology. PNG does not. I talked with Drs. Karen Wong and Edward Ko of the Department of Maxillofacial Surgery at Kaohsiung Medical University to learn a little about betel quid-induced mouth cancer. In Taiwan, how many new cases of betel quid mouth cancer are operated every year?
It's about 5,000 cases.
Is this number increasing or decreasing?
It's increasing.
At Kaohsiung Medical University Hospital, how many operations for betel quid mouth cancer do you perform in 1 year?
Averagely, we have 300 cases receiving oral cancer ablative surgery.
After people have surgery for mouth cancer, their lifestyle is significantly impacted.
They would encounter a problem of swallowing, speaking.
Eating,
yes. We also encounter great difficulties in rehabilitation.
Especially the social life.
I can well imagine. It must be very difficult. Also for the families.
Yes.
Do either of you know the 5-year survival rate after betel quid surgery?
Generally, it's about 50%.
So it clearly depends upon the severity of the case, but on average, about 50%.
Yes.
Cheng Hong said that chewing betel quid with lime leads to intoxication, and if repeated, may lead to dependence and addiction. What's happening in the brain? Is dopamine involved in betel quid addiction?
The neurochemistry and neurophysiology of dependence and addiction to drugs is under ongoing intense scientific investigation, and the gaps in our knowledge are decreasing. But with more knowledge comes the recognition that the situation is probably more complex than we originally assumed. Dopamine is involved in addiction, but it's also involved in other behaviours such as movement. Dopamine seems to be involved in learning or reinforcing the behaviours associated with pleasurable outcomes. If a person finds a drug experience pleasurable, then probably dopamine facilitates repetition of this behaviour. Also, some drugs such as cocaine and amphetamine stimulate dopamine release directly. Others, such as alcohol and marijuana, probably don't. So different drugs may have different paths to activate addictive behaviours. Recent research shows that the role of dopamine diminishes as addiction progresses, and in contrast to what we regularly hear in the media, dopamine is not the sole actor in addiction and shares the physiological stage with glutamatergics, opioids, and orexin. Over time, the roles of these neurotransmitters will gradually get greater exposure in the mainstream media. Unfortunately, there are no publications on the effect of betel quid on dopamine or other neurotransmitters, and in the absence of any experimental data at all, we can only presume that this general description also applies to betel quid addiction. Her skin is tender as DiMaggio's glove. Her skin is tender as DiMaggio's glove. Her skin is tender as DiMaggio's glove. Now Historically, the prohibition of the use of extremely popular recreational drugs by democratic governments tends to create a plethora of unintended evils. Think of the problems resultant from the criminalization of alcohol during prohibition in the 1930s, and more recently, the American War on Drugs. Decriminalization, regulation, and taxation are much more efficient means of control.
As occurs in the Netherlands, Portugal, Uruguay, and is being attempted with marijuana in Canada.
In Taiwan, growing and chewing betel quid is legal. Sale of betel quid, like the sale of all other agricultural products, is untaxed. Earlier, I caught up with Professor Ming Tsang Wu in the Research Center for Environmental Medicine at Kaohsiung Medical University and questioned him as to what government strategies are in place to assist or advise the 2 million Taiwanese who chew betel quid.
Our government only advise or educate the people to stop chewing betel nut. We don't know the detailed mechanism how the betel nut control the brain, so we don't have nationwide strategy to control it.
So do you think that there's a political involvement in maintaining betel quid chewing or growing of areca palm?
I saw some Department of Agricultural figures from a few years ago that said that areca palm was the second biggest crop in Taiwan behind rice. There is clearly huge money involved, and history shows that industries that make huge money always have ways of protecting their longevity, irrespective of their social benefit. It's strange that there are no government policies to control lime factories or taxing nut processing centres. We heard that the neurochemistry and physiology of dependence and addiction is under intense scientific investigation. But unfortunately, there is almost no research into intoxication and addiction to areca nut and lime betel quid. And there's no pharmacological replacement therapy to assist those addicted to betel quid who wish to reduce their intake or quit. I asked Professor Andrew Lawrence, Head of Mental Health Research at the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health at Melbourne University, why is there so little research on the cerebral mechanisms of intoxication and addiction to the fourth most commonly consumed drug of addiction in the world?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, and I can't pretend to have the answer to that. However, I can maybe give you some thoughts on why that might be the case. From a pharmaceutical company perspective, this industry is designed around profits. They are looking to treat first world disorders where people can afford to purchase medication. Betel quid addiction is predominantly a second or third world disorder, and therefore likely flies under the radar. If a medication was developed to address this problem, it's quite likely that those most affected would not be able to purchase the medication. From an economic perspective, the drive to develop a medication may not be as high as, for example, antidepressants or antihypertensives, which are sold widely around the first world.
Betel quid intoxication and dependency needs more university research, Western government-funded research. In that way, we can address some of the social problems that are neglected by profit-driven research.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think not only federal government-funded university academic-based research is obviously highly called for, but another potential source of funding would be philanthropy, where making a profit is not the key issue, where doing the greater good is the key issue. I think those types of fund sources should be pursued and should be educated as to the scale of the problem of this issue.
So, we arrive at the end of this troubling story of an orphan addiction. We have millions and millions and millions of people in PNG and other developing Asian countries who are addicted to a WHO-recognized type 1 carcinogen. Prolonged chewing can result in mouth cancer, which can be cured in about 50% of the cases by ablative surgery. This assumes that surgery is an option, which in many communities, it is not. There is almost no published research on the pharmacology of intoxication or addiction to the fourth most commonly consumed drug in the world. Unlike tobacco or alcohol, there is no pharmacological replacement therapy for areca nut beetle quid dependence. Today, scientific research is a global competition and largely, but not exclusively, a first world endeavour where funding allocation is influenced by perceived benefit and potential profitability. It appears that because chewing beetle quid has almost no impact on Western society, it's not a hot scientific topic, and thus it has no traction at Western educational or research institutions. This lack of interest by Western scientific institutions unfortunately negatively impacts the attitude to research on beetle quid in many Asian universities. Currently, the recruitment of philanthropic funding to stimulate research appears to be the only narrative with any potential. In the 60 years since Rodgers and Hammerstein made Bloody Mary an infamous prisoner of rhythm and rhyme, the bright light of Western scientific knowledge has advanced spectacularly on innumerable fronts, but it casts a deep, dark, geographically specific shadow of indifference over beetle quid dependence. With a return to the attitude that the goal of university research is to improve the lives of those most in need, scientific research could take this orphan addiction in from the cold, and Mary could sing her own songs, perhaps one of gratitude to neuroscience. Or maybe Western society could continue to gaze from afar and think, well, ain't that a crying shame, but it's not my problem. We will leave you with a more modern song about beetle quid dependence by Martha and the Hemones. Take it away, maestro.
Bloody Mary, well, that's not my name. Put you in the beetle, am I to blame? Got little money and the weather's too hot. Don't wanna bore you with what I got not.
Peter Osborne in Taiwan, and such an enormous story of scientific neglect, but with equally enormous possibilities for remedy. He graduated in neuroscience from the University of Melbourne a while ago, and now divides his time between growing pineapples and researching beetle. Next week, the Science Show turns once more to nuclear power as an inquiry proceeds in Australia. Production today by David Fisher and Hamish Camilleri. And back to Martha and the Hemones. I'm Robin Williams.
Bloody Mary, well, that's not my name. All my friends, we got the same pain. Hard work, little money, no chance to change.